I did say the other day that I haven't trusted many pumps in the crypto market, but this pump I actually trust. Now, it's not a very aggressive pump, as you can see, but it is a very well-sustained pump through spot volume and decent spot volume at that. And so what we're getting now is we're getting Bitcoin at 61,300. But look at the altcoins. The altcoins are basically telling you exactly what I said, because the altcoins only run when they really believe that Bitcoin's going to pump, and you can see that the altcoins are actually running. So I want to speak about that. But more importantly, even though I trust this pump, one of our guests that's coming on today says this pump will continue, but the pump will end in 3 to 4 months, and that'll be the end of the bull market. And that's where we differ. But we've got to hear his view, because he may be right. So today we're going to talk about why I trust this pump, and then we're going to debate whether this is going to really end in 3 to 4 months. I hope not, but remember, we've got to listen to what everybody says. So listen carefully, let's go. You'll remember when I called Phantom in the front runners at 30 cents or 32 cents, everybody laughed at me. Congratulations to the guys that are in front runners. Our Phantom call is 80% up or whatever it is. And it looks like it's only going to continue. And remember, guys, just before we start, remember today is the last day if you want to sign up to front runners and be guaranteed to actually get in, and not only be guaranteed to get in, but if you're not happy within 1 month, just let us know that you're unhappy, and we will refund you the money. If you want to do that, at the bottom of the show, there's a link here. Just look for the front runners link. Here it is. Join here. Today is the last day to do it. And then after that, you won't be able to join because we close the waiting list again, and then we only let people in if people actually leave. Anyway, big day today. We're here. It's Friday. It's a big Friday banter. As I mentioned to you, I really, really, really finally have a crypto pump that we can actually trust. I think that it's not a very aggressive pump, but it is a sustained pump, and it's sustained by spot volume. And I think that this is actually the pump that eventually takes us through the all-time high. And you can see what the altcoin market is telling you is the altcoin market is telling you exactly that. You got a whole lot of coins running. You got AVAX because of institutional adoption, Rune just because it's a great token, Phantom continuing. You got the AI coins running, and the reason why the AI coin is running is because NVIDIA has results coming out next week, and so the AI narrative continues to run, and it just looks like the market, like the sentiment in the market's changed. And with that, I think we are going to get into a very, very, very aggressive Q4. But one of the guests that we have today says, yeah, we are going to get into an aggressive Q4, but then the whole thing is going to fall into a pile. And he's kind of saying, look, by the end of the year, you got to be in cash. Okay, so that's what he's saying. And we're going to address that. But before we address that, I want to remind you of quickly that our Friday banters are sponsored. They are sponsored by NordVPN. I just want to show you something very cool about NordVPN. So I think we all know why you need to use a VPN, because if you're not using a VPN, you're not masking your IP address. And as you can see, I'm surfing here, and it knows exactly what my IP address is, and it knows basically, I'm using a work laptop, and that's why I'm not actually using a VPN. If I want to change that, then all I do is I go to the VPN, and what I will do is I will just pick where I actually want to be. So I want to pretend that I am in the Bahamas. Let's just say I want to pick that I'm in the Bahamas, and I click this, and bang, now I am connected to the Bahamas. So now, basically, I am fully connected to the Bahamas, as you can see. And now if hopefully if we refresh that page, you will see that this system, you see, it'll say, here, your IP address and you are protected. Now, what you'll see here is that some companies have actually become really smart. They know when you're on a VPN. Some exchanges actually know when you're on a VPN. And so what NordVPN has is NordVPN has one of the only VPNs that has another feature. And I want to show you how cool this feature is. You can go into a double VPN. So if you go to the bottom of NordVPN and you click double VPN, which is this button over here, you are double protected. So that way there's really, 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 really no way that either hackers or governments can trace where you are. And when you interact with exchanges or DeFi protocols, they'll never, ever, ever know where you are, because you got like double protection. And I think this is unique to NordVPN. Guys, we're going to make a lot of money in crypto. You got to protect that money. How do you protect that money? You go to the show. You do it today. Don't wait until you get hacked. Sign up with NordVPN and then pay $3 a month to protect your crypto. It's the best $3 a month you will ever spend. Trust me, just do it. I know you've been procrastinating. Just do it. You click here. You get 30-day money back guarantee, and you're paying less than $3 a month. Anyway, on that note, it's been a crazy week. Although I guess that I think the weeks ended off very well. And I guess that the good thing with the banter we're about to have today is that all our guests believe that we're heading for a bull market. I want to show you some tweets before we bring the guests in. Henrik says, but first the blow off top. So he's still thinking that there's a blow off top. James says, this so far has been a bull market for ants, which probably means that he thinks it's going to get a whole lot better. And we got Fred with us today. Guys, welcome back to Banter. And it's nice to see that everyone still believes that there's still the best part of the bull market still awaits us, I guess. Henrik, you think the best part awaits us, but the worst part arrives after that, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think what we're seeing here is going to be the greed, the euphoria that we see into any major market bubble, which I think we are right now in. And yeah, of course, I think we're going to see Bitcoin. I'm going to think we're going to see crypto in general do fantastically well into the, let's say, the next coming 3 to 4 months. But after that, I think it's going to be a very bad time for crypto and for risk assets around the world.
Holy shit. So you're talking 3 to 4 months. I thought that you were talking about like a blow off top that's going to last for like another 18 months. You're saying 3 to 4 months and then this whole party collapses.
Well, yeah. I mean, we are closer to a recession than I think anybody really understands. If you look at the recession signals that have been flashing over the last 6 months and some of the early signals that I have even flashed last year, and they are not timing indicators, but when they flash, they are very, very accurate. And so the problem is simply that we are all starting to party because we see liquidity coming into the system. But when liquidity is coming in, that's normally because the central bank starts to stimulate the economy. And when they do that, we know it's late party. But if you look at the real economy, if you look at the consumers, we can see they're struggling. We can see delinquency rates on credit cards. We can see that the unemployment rates are starting to move up. And if you look around the world, there's really no place that looks good. So I think what you saw in Japan just a couple of weeks ago is the beginning of the whole thing. I think the world markets around the world has topped, and I think that the U.S. markets will move into a blow-off top. It's around 61 to 6300 on the S&P, a strong move, maybe even stronger on the Nasdaq, but that's it, and it's going to be fast. And the situation, as I see it, is very, very similar to what we saw in late 2007 into, let's say, Q3 of 2007.
So that's very different from the four-year cycle theory, which kind of says, you know, if you look at the Bitcoin four-year cycle theory, you're kind of saying that the aggressive part of the bull run actually starts in 3 to 4 months, right? Fred, if we look at the traditional Bitcoin four-year cycles, do you think that cycle is still intact? I can't hear Fred. I don't know if you guys can. I think you may be muted, Fred. There we go.
I muted myself. Listen, I don't know about the 4 year cycle, but I think that the bull markets in Bitcoin, we've been in a bull market for 18 months and they last a whole lot longer than 18 months. So I think 3 years is kind of my sort of minimum for this bull market. And I would say even longer than that, because we have these ETFs, which are, you know, really just picking up capital now, And we've really just seen the beginning of the tip of the iceberg there. So it wouldn't surprise me if this thing lasted longer than 3 years, but I think we're going to go through all of 2025. That's kind of my gut feel.
So I think then what we got to do is we got to start agreeing on the macro first, because I guess if we can agree on the macro, if we can come to some kind of consensus or even disagreement on the macro, then we can maybe go into crypto. And James, you heard what Henrik had to say. You heard about the blow off top, and to be frank, he was the one calling for the blow off top for a long time. When everyone was calling the market down, he said this market was going to go up. We had him here on Banter. He was adamant that there was a blow off top. It feels like we've had an amazing, amazing, amazing run in the Nasdaq. It does feel like, I don't know if it's a blow off top, but it certainly does feel like an aggressive bull market. Nasdaq up at 1.45% this year. Obviously, we've had some kind of cool down. How are you feeling about the path forward?
Yeah, I agree on some points of what Henrik said, and obviously we have had some negative indicators in our economy. You're seeing the 2 year, 10 year spreads on the treasuries. The inversion is uninverting. You're seeing the spread between Fed funds and the 2 year inverting. You're seeing the SOM indicator being tripped with unemployment. You're seeing negative numbers coming out of the retail sector. However, you have to pull back a little bit, in my opinion, and go a lot further back and up and look at it from 100,000 feet. And so, first of all, the U.S. economy is the biggest economy in the world, and our market drives quite a bit of the industry here. And so, when you look at it and you start pulling apart where you're seeing positive indicators versus negative indicators, you realize that our services sector is still pretty strong. And we have a lot of spending coming out of Washington, and fiscal dominance is real. And so as much as the Fed has been trying to battle this, the inflation by holding rates high for this long, we've kind of run into the prices have stabilized at about a 3% inflation rate-ish, if you believe the numbers. And so the issue here is that we have so much spending coming out of Washington, so much fiscal spending, that you've got two economies in the United States. You know, you've got an economy that's contracting, and that's the economy that's interest rate sensitive. Things like, you know, commercial real estate or high interest rate sensitive companies that borrow on revolving debt. You're seeing certain types of consumers that are being strangled by this revolving debt because of the high interest rate, and you're starting to see the payments, the delinquencies on credit card debt for younger and lower income constituents and the demographic. So that's one part of the economy. The other part of the economy is expanding because of so much spending coming out of Washington again. And so you see that you've got the asset prices that are at all-time highs. You've got home prices that are at all-time highs. And you've got this late this older demographic, the boomers, who are spending like mad. They got a COLA adjustment, a cost of living adjustment that's higher. They're sitting on assets that they're drawing from. They're making 5% interest on their cash that's sitting in money market funds. And they're just enjoying the life. If you go out to restaurants here in Las Vegas, there's a lot of older people out there in restaurants. They're filling the restaurants because they've got a ton of money that they're spending. And so,
and they're earning 5%, you know, and they're earning 5% on that money, which is.
Yeah. And so exactly. And so the question is, and Henrik, this is where I differ from you, is that, look, the soft landing narrative is that's a real narrative because of the massive amount of spending that's coming out of Washington. And so the question is, do we grind into a long drawn out recession? And my base case is no. And we could have two things happen. We could start to grind into a deep recession, but we know that the spending will just pick up out of Washington. The second thing is we could have some sort of market event like we saw a touch of a couple of weeks ago with Japan, and have something break. You know, we talk about something break in the credit markets. And if something breaks in the credit markets, we know that the Fed and the Treasury are going to come in. They're going to start QE. They're going to flood the markets with liquidity because they cannot have the Treasury market fail. They can't have the Treasury market disrupted. And so that's why you can't have a very long recession. And that's why you can't have a deep drawdown of the market, because it will affect credit markets. And that's
I'm going to disagree with both of you. So I'm going to disagree with both of you. And I'll tell you why I'm going to disagree with both of you. I think I'm maybe either a little bit more naive than both of you, or I'm giving Powell the benefit of the doubt to say that as far as soft landing goes, soft landings go, I think Powell has probably done a pretty good job, providing he does one thing, providing he actually cuts rates in September. And I'll tell you why. I think he probably should have cut one meeting ago, in the last meeting, because since that meeting, we've seen the jobs numbers revised downwards. I mean, I think everyone was speaking about how bad this jobs number revision was. I think inflation, as you say, has stabilized at around 3%, but is probably slightly decreasing. Now, Henrik, I know you said that the Fed is late, and I think they are one meeting too late, but I think one meeting, 1 month in the big scheme of things is probably nothing. I do see the recession indicators, like you both see recession indicators happening. But I also think that short recessions are pretty much par for the course. I mean, if you If you look at the previous recession, we had a recession not so long ago when the Biden administration then denied that it was a recession because they said they changed the definition of a recession. But I think providing Powell actually acts now and does the right thing now in September, he may engineer a soft-ish landing. Now, the reason why I say a soft-ish landing, I think that rate cuts take about 6 months to actually filter into the economy. So, you know, you don't cut rates today and then tomorrow, you know, all of a sudden the jobs come back and the economy comes back. It takes a long time for these effects actually to be felt. So I'm going to be kind of like, I'd say, you know, much softer than Henrik's theory, who thinks we're going into a full-blown recession. I also don't understand why, if we get into a recession, why is it a total collapse? I mean, we've had many, many, many recessions in history. Economies don't collapse just because we go into mild recessions.
It's not a collapse. The problem is that we have so much debt right now that we're spending over $1 trillion on interest alone on that debt. That's more than we're spending on military. So if you get into a recession that is deep, if you get into something that's close to the great financial crisis, okay, you're going to have tax revenues drop by over 20%, and you're going to have cost of entitlements rise by 20%. So now your deficit's not $2 trillion. It's $4-5 trillion. You know, this is the problem. And so it would mean that we would have to issue that much more debt just to keep up with it. They don't want that. So the problem is, and here's what it all comes down to, Rand, is that I believe that the central banks, the Fed and the Treasury is not a central bank, but the Fed and the Treasury are much more apt to allow for high perpetual inflation to manage this debt problem than they are to allow for a deep crisis. And we've heard Powell say it before. Hey, I can deal with a drawdown because I can just flood the market with liquidity. We've done it before, we'll do it again. And so that's what my base case is, that we're going to continue to have high perpetual inflation for a long time. And the question is how much and for how long?
All right, Henrik, your response. I mean, you've heard my view, you've heard James's view. What aren't we seeing?
Yeah, that there are two different, you know, sides to the economy. There's the financial market, then there's the real economy. And if you look at the financial market, they think that you can, you know, do like a snap with the fingers and then you'll solve it with easy money. But that's not how the real economy works. And if you look at the real economy and you look at, you know, the interest payments that we see, you know, the private interest payments, they are up. And they're up faster than anything we've seen for the last 70 years. And every time they go up like that, you have a recession. Every time.
And why? I mean, why are you so scared of a recession?
Because you have the largest bubble, also equity bubble in the world ever right now. Okay. And you have the whole crypto market as well, which is for 90% of it pure speculation. And so you have an extreme amount of speculation in the market at a point where the economy is hitting a brick wall because of the consumers actually now struggling. They are struggling to pay their debts, the interest payments. And the reason that they have been partying, as some are saying, is because there were savings coming out of Corona. If you look at the personal savings, you would see that they were skyrocketing out of Corona because they were pouring a lot of money into the system. But what happened with that was that they created inflation and they create higher interest rates. And that has now completely swallowed the entire savings. So if you look at the savings now, they are now lower than before the financial crisis. So there's nothing here that it tells us that we are in a good place.
Okay.
So I struggle to see how that, you know, we just say, yeah, we'll just put money on it. We also have to remember that if they pour money at this one more time, what will the consumer do? Will they go out and spend that $1,000 if that is what they save? Or will they say, actually, we just saw we had interest rates going up and we've seen inflation and I'm a little worried about my job as well. I think I'm going to save these $1,000 for a rainy day, because if they do, then the QE will become completely impotent. There will be no effect.
You say that again, Fred? We didn't hear you there.
Or they're going to save it in Bitcoin, right? I think the question is, are they going to just put it under the mattress like they did in, you know, the very first stages of COVID? or are they going to hit their Robinhood accounts, right? And I think it's much more likely. First of all, I don't disagree that I do think we're going to head into very low interest rates. So, you know, people saying, you know, we're going to get a little, no, I think we're going to get a Trump presidency. Powell is history. You know, he may not be history day one, but I think you have to have a view on this, right? So my view is Trump's going to win, and we're going to have sharply lower interest rates. I mean, going down to something like 2%. That's kind of my view. You know, it's not the consensus view, but I do think we are going to go into much lower interest rates, and we are going to have, you know, anti-inflation energy policy, drill baby drill, et cetera, et cetera. I think all this stuff, and potentially a tax cut, right? Which I think all this stuff is good for equities. It's good for risk on assets. And even if the economy hits a recession, I think stocks and Bitcoin go up. That's kind of my baseline strategy. Even though it is, as you say, Henrik, it is ridiculously overvalued, but it's not ridiculously overvalued in a 2%, 1% environment. And I think
you'll go lower than that. I think you'll see the lowest rates that we have seen.
I'd say the macro consensus is we're going to go into lower interest rates, right? Print, baby, print. You know, will there be inflationary consequences? Probably down the road, yes. You know, but the short term is this is the short term path. The long term path is we're screwed. We're going to have a lot of inflation, right? And we're going to
printing debate. Money will not help it. I mean, how would
that's again, right? No, have to understand Henry, what right.
Printing money will help.
That's will not going to help it. Okay, so let's back exactly. up. Let's go back up to 50,000 feet. The question is, when they print money, are they going to actually put it directly into people's bank accounts like they did during the pandemic? The only reason they would do that is if we had another serious crisis, whether it's civil unrest, whether it's another, you know, some sort of pandemic or whatever it is. That's the only way that they would really do that. My opinion is that what they'll do is they'll come in and flood the market by buying their treasuries. We're all becoming Japanese, you know, like yes. We're all going to be Japan. And so they are going to flood the market. Will it fix anything? Henrik, no, it won't. That's the point. It's not going to fix anything. It's only going to make it worse. It's going to exacerbate the situation. It's only going to exacerbate asset inflation. It's only going to exacerbate the problem with the lower income and lower demographics. And so we're going to have the same problem, but worse in another 5-7 years.
Think about that. Think about what you said exactly there. And then, you know, if you have a situation where we see a deflationary bust coming out first, so we're going into something now, we get a recession, and then the Fed comes in. See, what happens then? Well, you probably see exactly as you said also, they're going to flood the economy, flood maybe even our personal accounts with money. Inflation will go up again. What yes. I'm just seeing is that there will be a lag from the moment that they do that until the moment where we actually start to see the turning of the economy. That is actually normally what you see when you get a stagflation.
Sure.
So but you're going to have a period of stagflation. What would you be investing in a stagflationary environment? Definitely not Bitcoin. Definitely not risk assets.
It depends on what so the, I don't think, depends I, on what the cause
I,
of
I don't
the,
see how the, you
it depends on what the cause of the dysfunction is. If it's just a regular plain vanilla recession, I think we paper right through it. If it's something that's more dramatic, if it's a credit market situation like we saw with Silicon Valley Bank, I think Bitcoin doubles overnight. And the reason for that is that it was up 50% when we had Silicon Valley Bank just on the ropes and going bankrupt without any other bank.
Yeah, James, hold on one sec. I think you're confusing two things. One of the reasons why Bitcoin went up because of Silicon Valley Bank so aggressively is because people thought that USDT and USDC were fully in Silicon Valley Bank, and people just wanted to get out of USDT and USDC. And that was a catalyst.
It's also part of the fractional banking system and people wanting to get out of that too.
Yes, okay. Okay, fair enough.
Look, I think one of the things to think about here is gold, right? Gold is up all-time high, right? And it's really it's really, you know, as Larry Lepard says, it's smelling something, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of feel like there's a very consistent scenario where all the stuff you're talking about, Henrik, happens, right? The real economy hits the skids. Some banks start having problems. Feds floods the money with liquidity. And gold goes up, okay? Gold goes up in that scenario, right? We're in a scenario where
not in the initial phase. I have to say, in a deflationary phase, if there's a liquidity problem, gold does not go up. That's not what we see.
I'm talking 2025, the year 2025. So
then after the Fed reacts, yeah, and then I will say yes. Then we get a fantastic gold boom. Yes.
So if we're looking at a scenario where gold is at, let's just say, $3,000 or $4,000 an ounce, okay, right, and by the end of 2025. Now, the question is, where is Bitcoin in that world? Okay. And I can tell you, I think Bitcoin is going to double the price, double the performance of gold in that world. Why? Simply because I think people are re-rating it as an alternative to gold. Okay. People are becoming smarter. They're not viewing it as just this crazy risk on asset like crypto was back in the day.
I
think they're going to look at gold, a Bitcoin as gold 2.0.
And but hold on, Fred, I agree with you. I want to agree with you because that's my thesis. But you have been seeing gold hitting all-time highs and pressing through all-time highs. I mean, gold's not just under $2,500, which is, I mean, all-time high territory for gold. Bitcoin's not there. And Bitcoin hasn't been following it, certainly not in the last 6 months, hasn't been really following gold. Is it a short-term lag? Is there something in the market that's, you know, have they not started seeing it?
There's a really great chart. I forget who put it together.
Yeah, there's a 3-month lag on Bitcoin to gold. It's a great chart. And right, you got to remember, Rand, we're in a situation here with Bitcoin where we just came off a halving, and you've got a lot of small miners that have been selling just to keep operating. And so it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy where they just have to keep selling to maintain operations. And you don't see it in the public miners. You see it in the small miners. I know some miners that are not profitable that were wildly profitable just a few months ago. So, you know, Bitcoin does march to its own beat here. And I agree with Fred that gold sniffs it out.
Bitcoin would be at 80,000 if it wasn't for Mt. Gox, Germany, and the threat of U.S. selling. I mean, that's a fact. You have three sort of events.
That's true.
Here.
That's true. Yeah.
How far are we away from? Do you think from the end of the Mt. Gox selling? I mean, I saw today that I think 92% of the first Mt. Gox distribution is already done, and this is the price. We don't know what the Silk Road or the government, the U.S. government coins are. Germany's completely done. How far away are we from these clouds being removed?
Well, look, I mean, let's exclude the U.S. okay, and just say Germany and Mt. Gox. Well, we've done 90%. We have maybe 10% left to go, maybe. So I would say. I say that's in the rearview mirror at this point, right? We do not need to worry about those things, okay? And the U.S. selling, I mean, I don't know what, James, do you know if they actually have sold?
We don't know. We see them move their coins onto exchange, which is not a great indicator. Some people say they're putting in cold storage with Coinbase. It's just not a good indicator. And this administration has been awful for crypto and Bitcoin, absolutely awful. So I don't trust anything they say about it,
It remains though that these things have not impacted gold; they have impacted Bitcoin, right? And so what we can say is that if there wasn't this Mt. Gox thing, if there wasn't the Germany thing, Bitcoin would probably be well above an all-time high right now, right? So I don't see that there's that much difference between gold's behavior and Bitcoin's behavior. Once you modulate out for those things. Mm-hmm. And I think both of them will do well in 2025. I don't disagree, Henrik, that we could see, you know, if something happens that's a big macro event, we could see some Bitcoin sell off. We've seen that in the past.
Of course. Everything correlates to one, and Bitcoin lead the way. Absolutely. So it's been the tip of the risk spear for years.
The only part I disagree with Henrik on is the government acting responsibly and allowing us to go through a recession. They're not going to. They're going to print money because their incentives are to get reelected, and they need a good economy to get reelected, and they will paper over the economy. You've seen it before where they point to the stock market chart and say, look at how great the economy is doing.
Yeah.
And it is a disjointed, it's not necessarily correlated.
This is the fun thing about money printing. It's not something we invented. And even if you call it MMT, or even if we do it like the way that the Fed does, it's not something we invented. It was something that was invented even before the French Revolution. Yeah. And it was done also there. And for a certain amount of years, you also had a very good time before the French Revolution, where they could actually party because now we could just print the money. We are jumping into that exact understanding again, and it's completely wrong and flawed. You cannot print wealth.
That's
so
right.
Everybody who you thinks that this is something that the Fed will just accept, will not accept this, is simply misunderstood.
Well, what are you holding up?
Prop. This is 25 livres from the French Revolution. Okay, this is actual paper money that was printed, and this would have been worth actually. You could buy a horse with this back in the day with this note. It's worth zero now. So. I mean, yeah, you're right. This is not new. This is the story of fiat.
I agree.
And it's a story that's ending.
I do.
And
then I have to ask you one thing. So we all say that there will be an end to the fiat system or to the fiat current.
Someday. I'm not saying that's imminent.
Agreed. But do you then think what will this U.S. central administration then do about that? Will they then just say, okay, we're going to give it up. We have the reserve currency status. We're going to give that up and leave it over to Bitcoin or to some other crypto that may come up and just step away from that. Because as we all know, the geopolitical balance that we have right now is based on that the U.S. is actually able to spend a whole lot more than they would if they did not have the reserve currency status. So I just see that is kind of it could be, it's a thought of world where the U.S. central administration will just move away and say, we just give it up. And I don't think the Chinese would actually love it. But how do you see then that the Bitcoin would then be, if the Fed is then introducing, and they will, and the ECB is already working on that, I know that for a certainty, on a central bank digital currency, do you think then they will just say, okay,
well, I think Fred's thesis is that Trump's getting into power. And if Trump is coming into power, then he said over his dead body, will there be a central bank digital currency in the next 4 years? So, I mean,
there will be somewhere else in the world, and the U.S. is
right? I mean, if you have digital dollars, dollars are digital now anyways, right? So if the dollars, if I don't have physical bills and I have digital bills, so what? That just makes it easier for them to print out and distribute to their special interest.
Try to explain to me then. Let's say that we do that, that we have a world where Bitcoin then becomes the center of that kind of your monetary system. How will that not have a huge deflationary impact on the U.S. economy? Because as there only is a limited amount of it, that would be like doing just a gold peg and just saying, okay, we limit it right now to this.
They won't do
why is it then that, we're saying if they will not do that, what is it that they will do to stop stagflation at the point where we start to see that coming out, if that's what could be the outcome?
Well,
I think they're going to do a monetary reset of some sort, but it's going to be something that will be in the hands of these administrations and not something that will be left up to the markets just to say, okay, we want this kind of currency or this.
That reset look like?
Like what we've seen after the, in the Bretton Woods, what we saw after the Second World War also, where there'll be a new kind of, agreement internationally saying, okay, we now need a new, a reserve currency for the world because these money that we've just been printing, we need to reset that. That's been done before after, major.
I agree with you, but that those things get done after like world wars. And I mean, right now, I mean, as much as there are like wars on all fronts, I don't think we're in a world war just yet. And I mean, traditionally, if you look at world wars of...
They do it because of the debt, not because of the wars. They do it because of the debt. It's the debt that's the problem. It's the stagflationary environment that's the problem. It's not the wars by itself. We have wars all the time. It's debt that's the problem. So when that becomes too big and unmanageable, then you have to need a monetary reset. That's
okay.
What you're turning
let me ask you. So talking about this, let's go to Japan, because just I just want to spend 2 minutes on Japan. We had we all speaking about printing money and how things break. We had a little tremor from the earthquake, which was the Japanese yen cash and carry trade. And James, I loved your tweet here where you said, if you don't understand the yen cash and carry trade, don't worry. Now that did the majority of the hedge fund managers who were in the trade, apparently. But I mean, at one, like we watched this trade almost unwind. I use the word unwind lightly because I don't think it was really going to unwind at that on that day. I think it was just a warning shot that was fired. But it, I mean, if I look at this chart, the chart's telling me, this is the chart of the Nikkei, it's telling me that everything's fine. And it's telling me that the world has decided that Japan won't increase interest rates anymore. What happens in Japan now? I mean, does Japan just not increase interest rates anymore and just swallow up all this inflation that's going their way? What actually happened here? Someone walk me through why this has gone away.
I don't know if it's gone away. It's a question of how big the trade was, and it was pretty scary. So the problem here, Ran, is that we've had free money basically coming out of Japan for over a decade. And so, you know, when just, you can borrow,
can we just define the word free money? So this is something I want to try and understand.
Let me walk you through it.
One sec. I want to try and understand something. So if I borrow Japanese yen, I'm paying zero interest, right? I understand that. But if I invest that money in the United States, I'm exposed to currency risk, aren't I? And if you look at how the yen has been devaluing against the dollar, then I may be earning 5% a year, but at this rate of depreciation of the one currency versus the other currency, I'm just going to use 2024 as an example, there's a 15% depreciation in the currency from top to bottom. So even though I'm earning 5% on the one side, I'm losing 15% on yen depreciation. What have I missed?
Can you see the chart I just brought up?
Let's try and get your chart up. Yes, there we go.
Okay, so this is the yen carry trade in essence. Okay, so this is showing us yen per dollar. Okay, so as that blue line goes up, the yen's getting weaker.
Yes.
The white line is showing us the difference between the 10-year yield of the U.S. Treasury and the 10-year yield of the JGBs, of the Japanese government bonds. And you can see that they're perfectly correlated. Why is that? Well, it's exactly what you just described. You sell short a JGB, you get yen, you turn around, you sell that yen, you buy U.S. dollars. You turn around and buy the U.S. Treasuries. You are exposed on that yen unless you buy currency forwards, which they do, and that nets out that price. So what happens is you have traders who remain exposed. Okay, so if you look at the end of this chart, you can see how there's a great separation between the blue line and the white line. It started a little while ago, okay? So you see that. But now if you go back to when this all happened and this carry trade occurred, and when it all melted down, that you see this next chart, that big difference collapsed. So the question was, how is the Japanese government, the Bank of Japan, how are they going to deal with the fact that this has gotten so out of whack? Well, their choices were to start selling U.S. treasuries, which they own over $1 trillion of, or have some sort of dollar swap agreement with the Fed, which we didn't see, or raise their interest rates. So what did they do? So they turn around, they raise their interest rates, which it's just phenomenal. So if you look at the amount that they raised them, this is the amount they raised them, that little line over there. There's that little bubble. That's the amount they raised them, 15 basis points. That's all they raised them. But that's not the problem. This is the problem. You've had free money for all these years to borrow that yen, buy U.S. dollars, buy euros, buy Aussie dollars, whatever you want, and go and buy risk assets somewhere else around the world. And so that has been the problem. The question was, you know, once they raised that rate, the signal was the era of free money from Japan is over. And that was what the problem is.
Okay. And now they came back and they said they're not going to continue to increase rates if they think it's going to disrupt the market. I called that a bullshit pinky swear, because what are they going to do when Japan hits huge inflation? They're not going to have many tools other than increase interest rates. Well, what other tools do they have in the arsenal? Well, what else could they do?
I think that this was a shot across the bow that, like, okay, we're free money's over. However, we don't want to disrupt international markets. So the question is, how are they going to stabilize the yen from here? And they gave traders a little bit of a scare, you know. And Henrik knows, he probably knows hedge funds out there who have done this, you know, where you have to now reel back your position. Now you've got hedge funds going long the yen. So the trade was more of an indication of the danger of just the sheer amount of leverage that we have in the system rather than just one trade like this on its own. That's the way I see it. So
Henrik, what do you think?
First of all, I have to say, I actually pretty much called that top also. Now I didn't do that, you know, publicly on Twitter, but my subscribers knows that I called that top. It was a year and a half ago that we were around this top, and that was based on the extensions that I do and the Fibonacci the Elliott waves that I do. So it was no surprise to me to see, and I actually also advised some of our clients to that and say, I think something is breaking 2 weeks before we actually saw this. And I think it's much bigger than this. Yes, I think it's about this, you can call it the carry trade or whatever. But I think it's about the easy money that we've been seeing for so many years. And the problem is, we are actually here now where when Keynes was asked, how long can you actually go about this with the stimulus? You can say, well, in the long run, we're all dead. Well, it's because he wanted to avoid exactly to answer the question that we are at right now. And the problem is, you can keep stimulating the economy to a certain point, to absolute perfect valuation, if you just, you know, push interest rates to zero. And that's what they have done in Japan. And at some point, you will have a financial institution taking on way too much leverage, again, like what we saw into the financial crisis. And that's what we see. And I can see several financial institutions right now in Japan that having a very bad time. And I can name some of them. I don't want to do that, but I can name some of them and say, well, I think some of these are actually going bankrupt. So I think we have a huge financial crisis on our hands here. Within the next year, 2025 will not just be about Japan. It'll be where this spreads to the rest of the world. And that's why a credit crunch, a liquidity, a shortage is going to come in a big way. So this is what we saw here was the canary in the coal mine falling down dead, which we now have to say, okay, now it's all fine because we're bouncing and, you know, we can see the markets are moving up again. Well, you know what? This is actually telling us just that volatility is.
So I think what this is telling us is that 5% in the US and 0% in Japan is not a stable equilibrium. We can't be in that position much longer. So, you know, the solution to this is, you know, 1% in the U.S. and that sort of solves your carry trade. You know,
do you think at 1% in the U.S. and 0% in Japan, do you think that that people still take out the cash and carry trade, or is the risk not worth
it? It's not big enough. No. So, and I agree with Fred 100%. And what the Japanese central bank was doing, the Bank of Japan, is they've been playing chicken with the Fed. They've been waiting for the Fed to lower rates and hoping that they'll do it quickly, and they've just been waiting for it. Henrik, you know, back in 2020. We had $18 trillion of negative yielding debt in Europe, $18 trillion. So but I think that era ended for a little bit here, but I think it's coming back. I think we're going to go right back to it.
Oh, yeah. But I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm just questioning what the effect of that will be this time around, because I think there is something that is not factored in, which is the consumer behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And if the consumer behavior does not follow the logic or the theory, which is based, you know, is behind quantitative easing and all that and the whole monetary, you know, theory on how to stimulate an economy, well, then you're not going to see the effect of it. And that's also why we have seen diminishing returns on every time we've seen, you know, more printed money coming out. We see less and less GDP growth of it. So I'm just saying, if they do that one more time, agreed, and it's a lack to it, and we actually did see
when
that.
They do that.
When they print, you know, trillions and trillions, they'll be huge. I tell you, yes, it will. But when they do that, we will see that whether the real economy will act like this, and I don't think it will. I think you'll see a year and a half, where you probably can see a stagnating economy, real economy. Unemployment staying, you know,
but that's how we get to Bitcoin 300,000. I mean, we get there very quick with that.
But you don't get that with 10% unemployment. You don't. because that's in the world that I'm looking into, that's what we see. We see, you know, but surely,
phase of it. Henrik, so surely if they're reducing rates and they're printing more money, unemployment goes, unemployment drops because, I mean, you got to spend this money.
But you say surely. You say surely. Again, you're anticipating and saying, okay, so the people that are getting these money into their hands are now going out immediately and spending this money. What I'm saying is, I think there's going to be a lag to it. And we actually saw some of that after Corona also.
But I don't think they're going to get money directly in their hands. So it's even worse, Henrik. I don't think they're
going to. So it's going to be even a bigger lag. The bigger the lag, the worse this will be. The stagflation will be.
Okay, so let me sum this up because we are running out of time. Henrik, in your thesis, how would you be positioning yourself now? You're saying cash is dog shit.
Not at this point. Not to this point here. At this point here, I also have a target for Bitcoin at around 120,000. So I'm very long Bitcoin and everything related to crypto by late this year.
Okay.
I think so November, December.
You're still buying Bitcoin up until November, December, when you feel that the behavior becomes the blow off top of the blow off top. And then after that, where do you position yourself? Do you sell your Bitcoin? Do you sell your risk assets and go back into cash? What's the trade after the collapse?
Everything related to risk will be sold off, where I'm at that point. Yes, and then you'll be at cash for a certain amount of time, and then there'll be or TLTs, U.S. bonds,
yes,
German bonds, and then you'll have a period also. But the moment when the Fed reacts and they start to this, I think it'll be mid-25. You want to move into something like gold and silver and, gold miners and all that, which will be a commodity boom that will be starting and everything, relates to commodities can be interesting there. But that will be it. So it'll be a whipsaw. It'll be like, risk, full risk on now. It'll be like, okay, then it'll be cash for some time or very defensive. And then I think it'll be, getting ready for that kind of stagflationary environment that I think can develop after the Fed moves back in again.
Fred, what do you think? I mean,
I think at the end of the day, Ran, I think macro doesn't matter all that much to the price of Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is going to grow. I'm a believer in sort of this power law theory. I think we're going to grow, and I think we're going to get to Bitcoin a million, okay, within the decade. So I do think we're going to get there, and yeah, we're going to have up and downs. I was a professional trader. I don't do that anymore. So I'm very, very long Bitcoin, and I don't expect to trade my Bitcoin. Now, if we hit something like 250,000 in 2025, I might take 20% off. That would be kind of my strategy. But my plan is to just hodl right through and, right through this entire cycle and potentially right through the next one. That's kind of my general plan.
James, where would you position yourselves?
Yeah, I'm closer to what Fred is thinking. That I'm such a long-term thinker on this that I'm not worried about this cycle. And I believe that regardless of what kind of stagflation we get into, I don't think that our central bankers and our leaders will think as rationally as Henrik. I just don't believe they will. I mean, we've seen the idiocy of the potential policies coming out of the current administration. So I believe that they will print because their incentive is to print and get reelected. Will it fix the underlying problem of the economy? Likely not. It'll just make some things worse. However, it will drive a lot of the economy because as we're seeing right now with fiscal dominance, it has been driving a portion of the economy and it will continue to do that. In the United States, we're such a large sector service. We're a service sector driven economy now. I mean, and financial services. And so those are really big. They're just too big to ignore. And they're going to continue to just paper into that, flood liquidity into that part of the market and hope that it does well. The things that you can't handicap that are very difficult to know is, do we get some sort of productivity miracle out of AI in the near future, 5, 7, 10 years? Very possible. We don't know. The other thing that you don't know is as the US dollar gets stronger around the world, many other currencies are hurt and many other citizens are hurt by those currencies. And will they turn to Bitcoin as a store of value for them because they can't get a hold of dollars?
And that's another thing to that you have to think about. We're so US-centric here, Henrik isn't, but we are here, that Bitcoin is a store of value and an investment tool, but you know, we don't have to deal with the oppression and the hyperinflation of economies that they will pile up over the next 10 years.
I just want to say one thing on James's point there, right? Because you mentioned AI. And I think, you know, Vinod Khosla posted this great paper. I forget who wrote the paper. But, you know, this stuff's coming faster than we think. And it's pretty clear that if we have a 2030 time frame, we're talking about, you know, superhuman intelligence by 2030. You know, not just ChatGPT, but something close to a sentient intelligence. That's kind of where we're going. And now, whether that's, you know, HAL of the movie, you know, 2001, or whether that's just an artificial intelligence researcher, right, who can look for cures for cancer, that stuff's coming in the within the next decade now. And that's just the reality. So I actually am bullish on that longer term, not even that longer term, medium term, you know, within the decade. I don't think it takes in a way, in any sense, from the Bitcoin story, because I think we need hard money and the world needs hard money. Most of the world is not even in the US block, right? Most of the world is just discovering. It was interesting. On one of my spaces, this fellow from Nigeria was, or not Nigeria, Zimbabwe was talking. And, you know, he'd been through the Zimbabwe inflation. And we were talking about Bitcoin in Zimbabwe. And he goes, yeah, some people are starting to get interested. And I'm like, what does it take to get involved in, what does it take? You know, a $1 trillion Zimbabwe note, that doesn't even get you sort of to consider it. But, you know, this, it's a process and we're learning it. These fund managers are learning it. And I think within the next couple years, we're going to have a change in understanding of Bitcoin, specifically Bitcoin, not crypto, right? But specifically Bitcoin. I think people are going to realize that this is a better version of gold. And that's kind of part of my thesis. I think James would agree with me there, you know, that that's sort of independent of macro. That's just people understanding and adopting this asset. That's it.
Yeah. And with the ETFs, we didn't even get to talk. Obviously, the three of us could talk for hours.
But I see that.
with the ETFs, it's going to force institutional investors to do their work and understand the asset and why it's so different as a separate asset class. And in my thesis, that they will start to allocate to it separately in, you know, over the next months and years. And in due time, as we see this perpetual high inflation because of the environment we're in, they will start allocating away from bonds and to Bitcoin as a store of value, because they know they're going to get negative real rates on long-term debt. And that's just reality. So that's my long-term thesis.
On that note, guys, I got to call it. We are completely out of time. Thank you so much. I mean, we could have carried on for another 2 hours. That's a given. Thank you so much. It's Alpha, 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 Henrik. Thank you, guys. Thank you so, so, so much. And to you guys at the Banter Fan, don't forget, we are back here on Sunday, another meme show. This time, we're focusing on memes on Tron. So if you want to be in touch with the DJ inside of yourself, join us on Sunday. Otherwise, we'll see you on Monday. Until then, guys, have a great weekend. Trade well, my friends.